Good afternoon, everybody. I'm so glad to be with you this afternoon, joining from Kampala in East Africa. As Sarah has rightfully said, I work on a collaborative research project that brings together two institutions from the global north and two from the global south. And I'm so happy today to talk about seems to be quite relevant to the Northumbria workshop series that is running currently. My topic is coloniality and ethics in development research, the case of refugee youth volunteering Uganda project. This is a postdoctoral project in which I'm currently engaged. I'll start by giving an overview of what this study is about, and then I'll try to introduce the team, talk about the team that engaged on this postdoctoral research. I'll then try to delve a little bit into the subject of today's workshop, coloniality. I'm bringing this from an ethics perspective because doing research in a developing country context has got a lot of ethical issues that one has to maneuver through. So in so doing, I'm going to take you through how the RIVU project was able to scale through some of those issues to ensure that we don't repeat mistakes of the past. I'll then probably take us into some, to look at one aspect of this study, the concept of volunteering. But I'm bringing this from the African perspective and trying to say this is one of the least understood or the least discussed dimensions of volunteering, especially when you look at development literature, and probably should be something for us to reflect about. I'll then leave us with about three questions or discussions, basically to stimulate interest and further engagement in this subject matter. So I'm going to begin my slide right now. I hope you're able to see my slide. Right. Sorry, there's some technical glitch here. Just bear with me a little bit. Oh, great. So basically, so what is Refugee Youth Volunteering Uganda project? So this research was conceived around the issue of youth employment, or youth unemployment as a problem for that matter. At the back of it all, if you reflect on the status of the youth, especially in Uganda, you realize that there's a lot of, there are lots of challenges facing the youth in as far as employment is concerned. The youth in Uganda constitute more than half of the population altogether. So there's quite a theme around there. Uganda is also a very big hosting country to refugees. Most of them were young people, especially from South Sudan, Burundi, Somalia, Democratic Republic of Congo, and other countries. So up to 83% of the youth in Uganda are unemployed. So I'm just trying to give you the background of why the youth, why focus so much on the youth. Now, in most cases, unemployment or unemployability per se is attributed to lack of skills. And one of the solutions that is normally proposed in development is to introduce vocational and technical education and training. We are going to look at whether this is really something that is upheld in practice, or there are other things beneath it. We are also concerned with the issue of skills acquisition. Skills acquisition tend to be at the center of employability. In most cases, youth unemployment is attributed to lack of skills. In fact, one of the reflected questions is, what comes before? Is it skills or is it volunteering? Do we need to volunteer in order to acquire skills for employability? Or do we volunteer? Sorry, do we need to acquire skills before we volunteer? Or do we volunteer in order to acquire skills? That is also something that we're going to reflect on a little bit here. We shall then move on and look at the policy context. What is happening in as far as the way youth skilling and youth employability is contextualized in practice? So this study had a number of engagements with people from the private sector. We had engagements with people from the development sector, the NGOs, community, and we also had engagements with the young people themselves. I just want to give a slight overview of the team. So the research team comprises academic staff from all the four universities that we already mentioned of. So we have Professor Matt Bailey-Smith from Northumbria University. Most of you should be knowing him. We have Professor Peter Kanyandago from Uganda Matters University, Dr. Cuthbert, and myself, also from Uganda Matters. From Northumbria, we have Bianca, who is in the room. We have Dr. Owen, who is right now in the room as well. We have Dr. Sarah Mills from Loughborough University. We have my colleague, Dr. Robert from Uganda, Barry University of Science and Technology, and then Dr. Frank. So that's the team. It's quite a good mix out there. Most of these are actually people with a lot of experience in research on youth, vocational skills, refugees, and international development. So it's quite a rich mix out there. So why RIVU? Why Refugee Youth Volunteering Uganda? So the aim of this study is basically to understand whether, you know, volunteering by young displaced persons could be a viable pathway, you know, to usher them towards employability. Some of the research questions include issues of place. Where are these young people found? By place, we refer to place in the physical sense, but also in the conceptual sense, because place is not only about where we find these people. Place could also be conceptually, what is it that they're engaged in? The issue of exclusivity of young people from certain things comes into play. Now, what factors shape, you know, youth participation in volunteering activities? And how do different forms of volunteering enhance or contribute to skills development? We are very concerned about that. But then what is the impact of volunteering in terms of how we understand meaningful work out there? There's the issue of volunteering, there's issue of employability, but there are also issues of precarity, how work, you know, lead to precarity. We're looking at vulnerabilities in as far as employment is concerned. So a lot of themes emerge from there. Our approach is both quantitative and qualitative. On the quantitative side, we have carried already very large surveys in four refugee settlements in Uganda, which I'm going to show you here. So we have one in Northern Uganda, Bidibidi Refugee Settlement, which is the biggest in Uganda, hosting mainly South Sudanese refugees. We have Rwanja and Aki Valley in Southwestern Uganda, where you get a number of Congolese refugees and Rwandese. But then we also have urban refugees from around Kampala. So we really wanted to understand the uniqueness that the urban space contributes in as far as gaining access to volunteering and therefore employability is concerned. Those are the four nationalities that we're interested in this study. You'd ask me why these four nationalities? The reasons mainly are that, first of all, these are the predominant groups of refugees that you find in Uganda. And of course, being a study, we could not go very wide. You know, we could not involve everybody. So we had to pick a sample to deal with, because this was quite representative, sort of. What you see down there, there's so many logos. These are the different stakeholders that we work with. So this is a very participatory research that engages different kinds of stakeholders. I talked about young people, but we also have the development actors already in this space. So we don't leave out anybody, including those from the public sector, the government people. So what have been some of the preliminary emerging definitions or understanding of volunteering just coming out of our study? To young refugees, just to pick an example, volunteering is doing some kind of work, okay? But with some hope of reward, monetary or non-monetary. It's also a way of getting a job, and it's a kind of gateway to proper employment. So there are some young displaced persons who look at volunteering as an opportunity, you know, to gain access to some kind of employment. Now, when you go to the public sector, one of the respondents looks at volunteering in terms of free service. The work that you do willingly without any coercion, but also without any expectation or payment. For the private sector, volunteering is offering service without expecting gratitude or payment from anybody. And then when we interact with people from the development sector, these are just excerpts, okay? Because there are divergent views, even from people within the same subsector. But here's what one of the development actors had to say. You know that there are some who use volunteering to dodge taxes, to hide costs, and so on and so forth. But for some, it is necessary. It builds the communities that they have, that they have lost, sorry. So you look at these divergent views and opinions, and you do realize there's still a lot out there that could be said about volunteering. So our research, the RIVU project, does not even attempt to come up with a universal definition of volunteering. That is not our objective. Our objective is basically to try to come up with a new conceptual framework that could then help other researchers, other interested people, other practitioners to understand the relationship between volunteering and employability. That is what we are trying to do. So, having done with that brief overview and introduction of the RIVU project, I now attempt to delve into the subject matter of today's presentation. In our RIVU approach, we tried, you know, to be conscious of the issue of decolonizing participatory methodology. If you read a lot of literature out there, most of the critics of participatory methodology will tell you that in most cases, the participatoriness is not exactly reflected in the actual, you know, steps and techniques in which data is collected. Because sometimes we tend to promote participatory research, but when we go out there, we're again bringing back some of these old traditional practices that tend, you know, to perpetuate the kind of bias that has always pervaded research practices all over. So we were quite conscious of that. The first thing we did was to see how to work with the researched. How do we work with the people that we are researching on or researching about? So in our design, we said we are going to include both refugees, and some people from the host population. Although this study is really about young refugees, when it came to recruiting enumerators for the quantitative survey, for instance, we did not leave out people from the host community. Of course, this was also being conscious of the national policy in Uganda. There's what is referred to as the Comprehensive Refugee Response Framework that says whatever you do for refugees, you should also do a certain percentage for the host communities. This is basically to promote the whole idea of mutual coexistence, and it's part of the do no harm policy. So we are conscious of that. We also were very conscious about the issue of the youth voices. How do you say you are doing research about young people and yet you don't involve young people in the study? And we're not going to involve young people only in terms of those we are going to collect data from, but we had to have young people both as advisors, but also as people who are collecting the data. So we came up with what we refer to as the Citizen Youth Advisory Board. So in each of the four settlements where we are conducting this study, we have a group of about 10 young people who were elected by their colleagues. We trained them on their role on the study. So basically their work is to provide us with advisory services to guide the study in terms of being sensitive and conscious to the needs and expectations of young people when you're working with them, doing things that are not going to harm young people. And they are the eyes that we use to look at issues to do with young people in the community. So that was quite a deviation from some of the common practices that you've seen in other studies. Community participation is real for us in that right from the initial stages in the design of the research questions, approach to the settlements, to the fieldwork, we brought different communities together. We brought people from the public sector. Office of the Prime Minister in Uganda, for instance, is the one in charge of looking after refugee issues. So they provided us the necessary guidance. We worked closely with the private sector in that we wanted the understanding in terms of how they see volunteering, what they expect out of young people. So we incorporated some of these viewpoints into our conceptualization and design of the tool. Then, so if you look at all this, we're just trying to stay true to our promise of doing a participatory study. Now, I bring one dimension of volunteering that would also be a point for us to reflect on. The issue of formal and informal volunteering. Because when you go into the development literature, and I'm happy that today we are talking about coloniality in development. So if volunteering in many cases is done as a way of bridging the development gap that we find in certain communities, whereby we see a transfer of skills coming from certain places to support, to strengthen institutions, systems, and policies and practices in other places, then why is it that in most cases, we are only referring to the formal aspect or what is considered to be formal volunteering? What happened to the other aspect of volunteering, the informal volunteering? By this, I refer to, a wide practice that was very, very common in many parts of the global south, especially in Africa, that you could see, you could feel, and you could easily define as volunteering, but in most cases, we're not really being recognized as so. I say this because if you delve deep into the various literature on volunteering in development, you don't see most of these concepts. Some of them, I just try to pick from different parts of Africa. In Uganda, for instance, there's a common practice called Bulungi Bwansi. This was basically people coming together to do something that is good for the community. And most of it was targeted towards environmental issues, planting trees or cleaning, you know, the village pathways, beating the bushes, cleaning the roads, and so on. Now, and what extent, to what extent do we find this kind of volunteering practice being expounded, you know, in development literature or even in development practice? To what extent are we tried to really go down and understand and try to pick, you know, certain aspects of this practice and maybe structure it for easy replication in other contexts, the way we have done with the other approaches to volunteering? The concept of Ubuntu, you know, this is a Southern African concept. It's basically about the oneness of humanity, basically doing good to your fellow human beings. And when you do that, then it also helps you to become more human. I am because you are, that kind of thinking. In Kenya, there's this practice of Arambe, you know? If you look at the Kenya national motto, Arambe is actually the word which is imprinted in the motto. Arambe summarizes so many things. Again, it's about self-help, community spirit, self-reliance, collectiveness, and all that. This is applied, so this concept is applied to rally masses together in order to do things for the common good of all. In Rwanda, just my neighbor to the south, they have this Umuganda concept, still practiced up to today, whereby again, people come together to do communal work, which is of benefit to everybody and is not for pay in anything. So there are so many examples. In Burundi, Bikora Rusanji, it's again very similar to Umuganda, it's very similar to Bulungi Bwansi. My point here is that there are so many practices out there in the global south, but these do not receive, you know, the attention and recognition that they deserve in discussions or in the practice of development in as far as volunteering is concerned. So whose reality counts basically was to say, what is it? Whose language are we speaking here when we are talking about international development? And I'm so happy that usually people who study development, at least they try to look at themselves as open-minded individuals who try to accommodate, you know, look at things objectively and try to make sense out of it. So let's try to look at this very small aspect of development practice and let's open our minds and probably stimulate more discussions regarding this. Because in the Ugandan context, you realize that these very good practices, which I consider volunteering practices, have actually lost meaning today because as one of the authors says, the influx of foreign aid, you know, and how the government promotes it has actually pushed these traditionally good old practices, you know, out of the picture. So you can see how modern approaches to development is actually helping to kind of muzzle out some of these very good practices. Now, let me try to unpack the concept of coloniality, since this is the main thing that we are talking about today. First of all, when we talk about colonization, we cannot discuss coloniality before looking at colonization. Colonization is the origin of all these things that we are talking about. While colonization was a space and time-bound occurrence, of course, characterized by things like conquest, subordination, you know, dominion, and setting up new structures of administration in place, what came out of it then was a kind of structure, a structure which was both physical but also conceptual. That is colonialism. Now, colonialism was about, you know, reinventing, you know, replacing anything that did not agree with the objective of the promoters of this concept and practice. Now, having done that, and you could assign a historical place to all these concepts, there was a period and time for colonization, colonialism, of course, and its pervasiveness through development policy and so on, also had its place. Of course, some of it is still felt even today. But what should concern us so much is coloniality, because coloniality is a transhistoric expansion of colonial domination and its replications in contemporary times. So it's both a conceptual thing, and for as long as we don't debunk some of these concepts, we may pretend to be doing something different in as far as international development is concerned, but this will remain with us. We shall keep on reproducing the same things. So some of the issues I wanted us to reflect on, the concept of South-South volunteering, you know, this has always been there. And like you saw in the examples I gave above, they are mostly driven by altruism and basically addressing community needs. How is this now different from the current models of volunteering that we see in development? The issue of horizontality, that there was always some bit of commonality between the volunteer and the recipient of volunteering activities. I'm looking at the traditional or the global southern practices, you know, what we call horizontal relationship. You don't have someone coming from a very high level conceptual point, someone saying, I have more skills, so I'm coming to give you skills. No, this was about people almost at the same socioeconomic level trying to support each other. In the Kenyan concept of Harambe, for instance, you see volunteering as a bottom-up approach where, you know, projects or ideas about what should be done come from below, and then everybody embraces it and not the other way around. So therefore, I tend to say volunteering in Africa was mostly informal, but in some cases organized through community structures, such as the institution of elders. Again, wouldn't someone say a volunteering practice organized through a community of elders is actually formal? So why then all the debates about formal and informal? Why don't we just talk about volunteering per se? In conclusion, I know time is running out. So how then did we maneuver through some of these decolonizing aspect study? Of course, there are certain things when it came to designing the tool, the questionnaires and the question guides. There were issues of, you know, trying to compare the different people from different nationalities and different backgrounds. In most cases, you are talking about, if you go to development literature, we talk about tribes. This is the most convenient way of drawing lines between different people from different communities and background. But in our consultation with the team on the ground, with young people and with the team from Uganda, we said, no, we are not going to use the word tribes because this is not an acceptable concept, but we'd rather go with ethnicity if we are very interested in finding out the differences among the different peoples. There are also common practices in research where you tend to look at the people being researched as subjects, you know, or respondents or beneficiaries. So we again had to debate this. Really, are we going to talk about research subjects here? We said no. Research subject does not bring out a good implication. We'd rather refer to them probably as respondents or as participants. And all this were not of our making, but based on conversations that we had with the team on the ground. So basically, I wanted now to leave you with this set of questions for reflections. And after the break, probably this is something that we could talk through. The first question or point of reflection I wanted us to share is, in what ways can development work be fashioned to challenge the norms of coloniality that shape our understanding of developing countries? The second question I want you to think about is whether volunteering is a form of precarious work that can reinforce vulnerability. If you agree with this, probably let us know how. My third question and point of reflection is, in what ways can the North-South research institutions build mutual partnerships amid diverse institutional policies, funding models, and competitiveness of research agenda? In other words, amidst all these very, you know, rigorous structures and systems in place, how can we challenge, you know, through our approach to research, how can we challenge some of these practices that might potentially promote the legacies of coloniality? One question that keeps coming to my mind is, as scholars in the marketplace, there's a book by one of the Ugandan professors, Mahmoud Mamdani, Scholars in the Marketplace, where he reflects on the role of academic institutions today. Who sets the research question? Is it the market or is it the university? I thank you so much, and I leave it at that. Thank you very much for listening to me.